Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
You're listening to Farming News with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello, folks, and welcome back to this week's Irish Farmers Journal Farming News podcast. I'm Barry Murphy, news correspondent here in the team. We're coming to you a bit earlier this week with the paper available for readers on Wednesday, given St. Patrick's Day tomorrow and the Double Bank holiday. Despite the shorter week, we've a lot of farmers' news to cover, so we'll kick into it now. On this week's episode, we're going to discuss how department officials are considering a cull cow scheme to address methane emissions, land prices, farmer views on the new cap and how the department now concedes it may have to change, farmers' fertiliser woes and sinister death threats which have been made to IFA officers. We'll also hear from our livestock team's Niamh Gunn, who was speaking to the CEO of the Irish Limousine Society, Ronan Murphy, about the trade for limousine bulls at last Saturday's premier sale. We have a bit to get through, so first we're going to speak to our deputy editor, Jack Kennedy. Jack, on this week's front page, you report that once again the department is considering a move to reduce cow numbers. I understand a potential scheme was discussed at the meeting of the Food Vision Dairy Group on Monday. What was said?
Barry, I suppose it's fair to say it's not cow numbers per se in terms of that group, the Food Vision Dairy Group. It's greenhouse gases, and that's really what the objective is of that group meeting, is to try and see how can Ireland Inc. respond to reducing greenhouse gases. And of the number of issues have come up with it. One of the pieces that came up in the previous meeting was that, listen, there was going to be mandatory limits imposed on farmers, whether that was a cow limit or a volume limit per farm. But I think more recently, the discussion has moved to maybe trying to impose a kind of, I call it effectively a greenhouse gas limit on a farm, so that if a farmer helped or improved the situation on his farm in terms of better for the environment, that they'd get credit for that in terms of their overall limit, you know. And that's, I suppose, that would be a good way of working something in terms of a bit of transparency in terms of the link between the greenhouse gases that the farm was producing and the effect on global warming. So, I mean, this week, as you said, the issue that came up was that, listen, is there any way we can, cows that are maybe not up to speed in terms of a breeding worth, or in terms of poor cows, that they would leave the system, or indeed farmers that maybe potentially have had enough and that are going to retire out of the system as well, and maybe some kind of an incentive scheme, like we have seen happening in the likes of Glanbia already when they came under peak processing capacity pressures earlier in the year. So either it's a combination of a cull cow system and a farm retirement scheme for farmers that the new group are working on, and they're going to report back to that group chaired by Gerry Boyle in the coming days.
I think a lot of lads, actually, with the cost of fertiliser this week and in recent months as well, they'll be thinking about what cows they could cull, Jack. But look, I know on page 3 as well, you were looking at the department and how they've conceded that some aspects of the new cap may have to change. Where has this come from, and what are farmers to make of it all?
Yeah, look, I mean, the background again to this, Barry, is that, you know, and as the senior department official speaking in the CAP meeting in Tipperary on Monday said, like he said, that this CAP that they're going to roll out from 2023 onwards, it was devised in 2017, you know, so a lot has happened in the intervening period, you know, and especially in the last number of weeks, the world has changed again, you know, so in terms of all the discussion was an environmental and trying to make it better. And look, it still is. There's no one saying to go away from that. But alongside that has to be that whole food security and feed security piece that has become much more higher on the agenda in the last couple of weeks and months. So I think the discussion on Monday night, there was a lot of criticism from the floor from farmers that, listen, guys, you're not serious. Every scheme that you talked about here tonight at the CAP meeting in Tipperary was in terms of reducing production. And the farmers shouted from the floor that, listen, you know, the world has changed. You need to get real in terms of what you're trying to do here. And I suppose go back to the drawing board, because it's what you were trying to do has changed fundamentally. And you need to kind of make changes to reflect that in the new CAP. So that was an information meeting, Barry, on the CAP 2023 and the rules of the schemes, etc., that were going to start in 2023. So there is time, in fairness, there is time for changes to be made. And I think the department officials were saying on the night that, listen, you know, we hear you, we hear your challenges, and you hear your response to us. We'll take it back to our officials, and we'll have to go back to look at the schemes, the way they're presented, etc. So yeah, that's the background to that piece, Barry.
Thanks, Jack. Interesting stuff there. And we're sticking with CAP for a few minutes, folks. We'll head to news correspondent Noel Barden next. Noel, you've also joined some of those department CAP information evenings where farmers have been sharing their views and asking questions on what's coming. What are farmers to say on the new plan?
Yeah, so farmers had a lot of questions to ask the department officials at these meetings. Some of the questions were directed more so towards elements of the new CAP, which would be which would be the farmers' implementation of the measures of the new CAP, whilst other questions related to kind of where the policies came from. Eco schemes were one area that received quite a lot of attention during the question and answer sessions at the meetings. Farmers had very practical questions like with the rotation and break crop measure. Why were there only four crops listed, and they were peas, peas, oats and oilseed rape? There was some farmer interest in wondering whether maize, potatoes or beet could be grown. And what the department came back with was that this, first of all, was only a proposal and they still had to hear back from the commission on it. And second of all, that the eco scheme would be a yearly scheme and it could be updated and changed from year to year as kind of lessons would be learned on the ground on implementing the measures. Another question that popped up with the eco schemes was why there was only eight measures in the scheme and not more. The department had said that they had initially published five measures and there had been some pushback from the farm organisations that this didn't give farmers enough scope to choose the measures that were most suited to their farm and to their systems. And they said they didn't go further than eight, up to say maybe 20 or 30 measures, because this would have created, as they said, a monster scheme. There would have been huge complexity in this scheme. And as well as that, some of the measures might not have allowed for advance payments to have been made to farmers for carrying out the actions in October, as the department currently does, as the department currently makes advance payments of usually 50%, but last year I believe it was 70%. So some of the measures might not have allowed this advance payment to have been made to farmers. Another eco scheme question that came up was on the planting of trees. Some farmers asked whether they could plant all the trees that they would be required to plant over the 2023 to 2027 period, all in the first year, to kind of get that measure out of the way. And the department said that they have queried the commission on this. They have looked for permission to allow farmers to do that. But like a lot of things with the commission, they haven't yet been told that they can, and they haven't been told that they can't. And there could be some practical considerations from this point of view, whether or not there would be enough planting stocks in the country to allow a significant proportion of farmers to plant so many trees all at the one time. But if farmers were allowed to do this, if the commission did give the okay and the department accepted it, farmers would have to apply separately for payment each year on these trees within that measure of the eco schemes. Other kind of higher level questions that came up from farmers were kind of, where did these policies come from? Who came up with them, and can they be justified? Some farmers asked whether the taxpayer would be happy funding schemes with such a low minimum stocking rate requirement. And what the department came back with was that the commission had kind of put these questions to citizens of the EU, asked the citizens what they wanted, asked the taxpayers where they wanted to see their money going. And the kind of answers that the commission came back with were that consumers, taxpayers wanted more redistribution of funds. They wanted more funds to be diverted to environmental measures. They wanted a better targeting of payments to active farmers as well. And the Commission worked within this framework to draw up the regulations within which the department came up with these schemes. So yeah, there was quite a variation in the type of questions that were asked. And I suppose farmers will still have a lot of questions when they're waiting on some sort of an indication to be given of the actual measures that will be in place rather than the proposals. But I think farmers did get, they were able to clarify a couple of points, and there was certainly a lot of questions asked, and farmers did avail of the opportunity to engage with the department officials at these meetings.
Thanks, Noel. That's A1. It's great to get a feel for what farmers are feeling on the ground there. Folks, you can read more on those questions on CAP on page 6 and 7 of the paper this week. We'll head to Sheep and Schemes editor Darren Carty next. Darren, we're hearing this week that the reference years for a new suckler scheme have been revealed. Is it good news for suckler farmers?
Yeah, look, I suppose, Barry, it has to be welcomed that there's more flexibility. So the news is that, say, I suppose a lot of farmers will look back at the BDGP, and there was one of the criticisms was 2014 was brought in as the year, or reference year, the number of animals you had, the payment was based on that for the next 5 years. So what the department is doing this time around, or is proposing to do, is that payment would be based on an average of 3 years going between 2016 and 2021. So that opens up, I suppose, the potential for the payment to be linked more to what a farmer has been producing over the years. And it also gives farmers an option to get around certain circumstances, such as if they lost land in 1 year, or if they had an issue with, say, a bull infertility or something like that. That was criticisms of previous schemes, is that it didn't give farmers an option to do that. Like the department, I suppose, they're going a step further than that, in that if somebody only calved cows for 2 years, you could take the average of them 2 years. So look, it is welcoming to see that angle of it. As Noel mentioned, look, there's lots of queries, there's lots of criticisms around the scheme on certain elements of it. Some farmers don't, or some, I suppose, wiener producers don't see why they should be obliged to sign up to the Boer Beef Sustainable Beef and Lamb Quality Assurance Scheme. Other farmers are quite happy to do that. I suppose there is a bit of maybe, I won't say concern, but there's a lot of discussions around that there's quite high level targets around genotyping that's gone from 60% to 70%, so it'll add a bit more cost. The weighing element is brought in from BEEP into the new scheme. That's partly, I suppose, the reason for the higher payment level, 150 euros in the first 10 cows, 120 euros thereafter. But some farmers have said that, well, does that mean now that there's no longer going to be a BEEP scheme? The department have come out and said, look, that's still an option, but that would come from national exchequer funding. And the other side, I suppose, is the targets for the replacement strategy, in that they're currently 50%, they'll go to 65% in years 3 and 4, and they go to 75% in year 5. There's also quite, I suppose, aspirational targets around AI sire usage, in that that's currently 80% of sires used have to be rated as 4 or 5 star. That goes to 85% in years 2 and 3, and then jumps up to 90% for the final years of the programme. So look, they are just some elements, but I do think on your initial question, Barry, it has to be welcomed that there would be more flexibility. Some farmers are pushing that flexibility would follow through the scheme, in that you could have a rolling average to take more account of what actually production is like as we move through the scheme, which would be a sensible thing, but maybe the department's hands are tied on what they can do at EU level.
Thanks, Darren. It'll be interesting to see how that all shapes up now. We'll change the subject altogether now and head to Paul Mooney from our Irish Country Living team. Paul, you and the team have brought together the Irish Farmers Journal annual Agriculture Land Price Report, available free inside this week's paper. Your report that land prices shot up 16% last year, while the number of farms for sale decreased by some 15%. Interesting news for many of our readers. What else can you tell us?
So Barry, I'd look back 12 months ago at the start of 2021, and we were quietly confident that the land market would be buoyant in the year gone by. You know, demand looked to be strong and whatever, and supply tight, and that's actually how it turned out. In fact, as the year went on, Barry, we could see that prices being made at auctions, for example, were very strong, and that was the outcome for the year. Land price up 16% on average. Price increased in 21 out of the 26 counties, so you know, spread quite widely across the country. And land supply was down. Interesting, Barry. Just the drop in the number of acres for sale last year was 11%. It fell to 40,500. You know, it still is a considerable area of land for sale, but nonetheless, that was backed by 5,000 acres approximately on the previous year. So that's a big change in the number of acres that came on sale. And that drop in acreage, you know, again, it manifests itself in a lot of counties. There were exceptions, of course, some very obvious exceptions there. From early on in the year, we could see that the land market was very active in Westmeath, for example, and Longford. You know, supply was up in those counties for no particular reason, Barry. That's just how it changes from year to year. And indeed, it turned out to be very buoyant in those two counties, for example.
Interesting, Paul. And this was, look, the report also includes information on some new aspects you've seen in the agricultural land market, where businesses are buying up land for rewilding and planting to offset their carbon emissions. What's going on there?
Right. Well, that's a kind of new development that emerged last year. So they would be part of what we would term the business category of buyer as against the full-time farmer. And of course, that business category has been growing in importance every year, Barry, for the past more than a decade, heading for two decades now in the Irish land market. So that business category would have bought 40% of the holdings that sold last year, you know, then followed in size by dairy farmers, for example, and other types of active farmers. So, yes, last year we saw a small number of holdings were bought by business people, specifically with a planned intention to rewild this land, Barry, or to use it in some form for carbon abatement. So that's a kind of a new thing, really. And the number of holdings that now sold was absolutely small. You're talking about a dozen around the country at most. But many auctioneers received inquiries from other interested kind of buyers. So we're looking to see, will this be a trend that kind of is maintained in 2022 and maybe grows? And the people who did make purchases last year, Barry, they tended to be business people with large, you know, core businesses that are not related to farming as such. And they, I suppose, reckon that they will have to come up with carbon abatement plans over the next few years for that core business. And it appears that they would see the farmland that they've bought as being part of that. And, you know, the small number of holdings that were bought last year for this purpose, rewilding or carbon abatement, they tended to be marginal type land anyway, you know, not the highly productive land. So that's something just of interest to watch as well, you know.
Thanks, Paul. And as mentioned, folks, the full agricultural land price report is available inside this week's paper. In more news on increasing prices elsewhere, we've seen fertiliser prices jump again this week, with some merchants calling a halt to sales altogether. Political correspondent Pat O'Toole has been hearing from farmers on the ground. Pat, what are farmers making of it all?
Well, I think there was an awful lot of concern among farmers and apprehension. How am I going to afford this fertiliser? How am I going to get lines of credit to maintain cash flow and pay for it? You know, how am I going to make any money this year? But I think that's changed over the last week. We were getting reports late last week, and they escalated through Thursday and Friday, that farmers were not being quoted for when they were looking for fertilizer. They weren't being given prices. So an awful lot of co-ops went public between Thursday and Friday and announced that fertilizer prices would be increasing whenever that basically they'd stopped selling at current prices, and when they would have product to sell again, it would be much dearer. And much dearer means anything up to 200 euros a ton is closer to 1,000 euros now, heading to where urea was in December. And for those farmers who stood back from the market or who couldn't afford to buy in January, February, they're now being asked to dig even deeper. And like the record prices of a couple of months ago now look like good value, which seems insane, but that's where we are. And there are doubts around availability. I mean, the worry for farmers is if they hold off and only buy as they need, will there be fertilizer for them? If you're a tillage farmer, will there be fertilizer for the top dressing, the second top dressing in May? If you're a dry stock or dairy farmer, will there be silage there for paddock rotations or for second cut silage if you've got enough in for the first cut? So like these are real worries and farmers are getting angry.
And Pat, we're also having fears from farmers that there's a level of price gouging going on with fertiliser. Are they panicking just yet? And what's the talk on the ground in co-ops and from merchants this week?
Yeah, that's very true, Barry. And like that's this like the apprehension has turned to anger. And I think that anger will be increased by anyone who reading Anne Finnegan's very in-depth report on fertiliser imports. She looked at quarter four of 2021 in great detail. The import figures as recorded by the CSO, as reported to the CSO by the importers, which they have to do. And about the same volume of fertiliser was imported. But in quarter four, and as we know, very little fertiliser gets spread in once you get into October. The average imported price of fertiliser was €643 a tonne. That's across everything. Urea, compounds, CAN, everything. The average import price in quarter four for CAN was €380 a tonne. And farmers have been paying €700 since December. So like, it seems that there was a huge buffer built in by the trade. And we don't think it was the merchants. We think it was the fertiliser companies. But we don't know. But the between them anyway, they nearly doubled the price to farmers. We always thought fertilizer was a low margin product. So there's questions to be answered there. And if they were buffering it because they were afraid that product wouldn't be paid for, well, merchants haven't been releasing much fertilizer without getting paid for it. Our understanding is a lot of farmers have paid up front. And if there was some kind of community rating where they were protecting against further price increases, should things go wrong in Ukraine, and they have, and we're now looking at a war in Europe and all the impact of that on fertilizer trade in particular, you would imagine that these latest price increases wouldn't have happened, that the profits taken on the earlier sold fertilizer would be absorbed into the price increases which are hitting the trade now. So farmers would be paying the same amount for the fertilizer. And I think farmers broadly might live with that, but I think we're going to have real arguments over what's happening right now.
Interesting stuff for sure. And folks, you can read more about that on page 26 and 27, where policy analyst, as Pat mentioned, Anne Finnegan, gives us more detail on the margins on fertiliser from importers and merchants. Pat, you also report that sinister threats have been made to IFA officers this week. What's going on there? And are the Gardaí involved just yet?
Yeah, the Gardaí have been contacted. It started out as text messages to a couple of IFA officers. And it has escalated, a number of phones being used, but the pattern of behaviour would suggest it's coming from one person or a group of people acting together. Burner phones, so there's untraceable as to the ownership of the phone. The messages, they're quite sinister. Threats are being made, innuendo and threats against family members and direct threats against individuals, escalating to death threats, and county officers being targeted and officers above that in the northern half of the country. The Gardaí have been contacted, and it is very sinister development, and it's very concerning because IFA in particular officers, their numbers are shared publicly. As we know as journalists, all the IFA committees, the phone numbers of all the members of the national committees, which have members from every county in Ireland, every executive, they're publicly available on the website, which is a great resource for the likes of us, but also for farmers who have an issue to make contact with their local IFA representative. But if that information and that access is being abused, you know, questions are going to have to be asked. So it would be terrible if a small group of people acting in this insidious way were to undermine the openness of the voluntary officers of the IFA and indeed the staff.
Thanks, Pat. We're going to change the subject now and head to the pedigree sales. The livestock team's Niamh Gunn was speaking to the CEO of the Irish Limousine Society, Ronan Murphy, about the trade for limousine bulls at last Saturday's premier sale. Niamh reports more.
So, Ronan, how was the trade today?
Yeah, we were very happy with the trade today. There seems to be a very good clearance rate. We're looking forward to seeing the figures at the end of the day. But it was vibrant, prices were good, and good confidence in the limousine breed. So I think it was a very good sale all round.
Perfect. And is there many bulls going to Northern Ireland or being exported?
Yeah, I think there's been very good interest there from Northern Ireland today. We see around the ring, and then when we analyse the online buying later. But I believe there's a good number of bulls going to the north. So we're very pleased about that. Yeah, and it's been just a good overall day.
Perfect. And are you happy with the overall sale today?
Yeah, very good. It's our first spring sale of this year. Spring is a good time for the limousine breed. There's been very good confidence both from suckler breeders, the beef industry, and from dairy buyers. So it's a very versatile breed, and we're very happy with the support and confidence in the limousine at our first sale this year.
Perfect. Thank you. You can visit thefarmersjournal.ie to get a full report on today's sale.
Thanks, Niamh. You can read more on that on the Irish Farmers Journal online, folks. That's all we have time for this week. Don't forget, you can also tune into our Down to Agri Business podcast, where Deputy Editor Jack Kennedy, Policy Analyst Anne Finnegan, and Market Specialist Fiona O'Neill discuss fertiliser coming into Ireland over recent months and farmer reaction to the cap proposals. They also ask if the EU can really change those cap proposals at this stage. Thanks for listening, folks, and happy St. Patrick's Day.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.